This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
What's not going into the gas pump is apparently going into our mouths. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. The government's latest assessment of economic growth is due tomorrow morning. Now, that data is for earlier this year, but as we approach the summer, there are signs of some vigor in the U.S. economy. On Thursdays, we like to consult Diane Swonk, the chief economist at Mesirow Financial in Chicago. Good morning.
Good morning.
So we're seeing signs of life in the real estate industry. But what am I seeing here? That if you want a brand new house, brand spanking new with a nice new shag carpet, it's going to cost you?
It's going to cost you a lot. In fact, the premium of new versus existing homes, usually when you're coming out of a recession, it tends to be higher, although it's never been quite as high as what we're seeing, about a 40% premium you have to pay right now versus 20% on average. And that's because builders have really continued to chase the more affluent buyers out there rather than first-time buyers, and they're complaining that increased zoning laws and more expensive land has made it much more difficult for them to do those big greenfield sites of cheap housing they once did for first-time buyers.
Something else I wanted to ask you about, we're coming up on 1 year since I started doing stories about crude oil prices going lower and lower and lower. That's presumably saving households money. Are we ever going to spend any of this?
Well, you know, we are spending a little of it. They're going out to restaurants and bars and kicking it up a little bit. That's exactly where you expect to see people spend discretionary money without making a big commitment. We also have seen bookings for the summer travel season pick up, particularly airline travel. And we know people are driving more this holiday weekend that we just saw. They actually drove a lot more, about 5 to 6% more than they did the year before. So it's coming through, but more of a trickle rather than a gusher.
All right, Diane Swonk, Mesirow Financial. Thank you.
Thank you.
In the U.S., EPA officials are working on a new definition of when too much algae in lakes makes a water supply unsafe to drink. And the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration has a new way to forecast the algae blooms. But what about new limits on the stuff that contributes to the algae? Some experts are disappointed that the EPA is not doing more to limit fertilizer running off of farms, the kind that helped make algae-laden Lake Erie too toxic to drink last year. This despite new EPA rules for drinking water issued just yesterday, Marketplace's Annie Baxter reports.
After reading through the EPA's new rules, William Busby, a law professor at Georgetown University, says he doubts they'll do much to limit runoff of farm fertilizers.
That remains a thorny challenge that we have not addressed effectively in the United States.
Fertilizer runoff feeds algae, and when they die, they produce a toxin which can make water unsafe to drink. Richard Stumpf is an oceanographer with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association. He says those algae blooms flourish in summer.
These blooms, cyanobacteria, they like it hot. They don't grow very well when it's cold.
Stumpf is part of an effort to assess how much phosphorus from pollutants like fertilizer is getting into Lake Erie today and what that could mean for a bloom in a few months.
The spring phosphorus load is what drives the summer bloom.
Stumpf says armed with that information, communities can at least order more supplies like charcoal filters to eliminate the toxins and make the water drinkable. I'm Annie Baxter for Marketplace.
One would be reluctant to hold a smoke-a-thon to fund preschool education, but that's essentially what California has been doing for decades. But the tobacco fund for the state's youngest learners is wafting away. Deepa Fernandez of KPCC reports from Los Angeles.
Three Marlboro lights.
A drive-by smoke shop tucked inside a strip mall in suburban Los Angeles is hardly the place one imagines the universal preschool revolution might depend on.
Two camel crush. 950?
Yes.
Okay.
Yet Eduardo Hernandez's pack-a-day habit has helped fund preschool and other children's services. Tobacco taxes will generate about $350 million in California this year. 80% will go directly to fund programs for children under five.
I know smoking is bad. So.
Do you think you'll quit one day?
Yeah, definitely.
And there's the rub. People are quitting or cutting back. Good for health, but what about preschool? Smoking got linked to funding little kids' services back in 1998 when California voters passed a proposition to tax every pack of cigarettes 50 cents. It was a pretty big deal if you ask Moira Kenny, who advocates for early childhood programs in California.
50 cents seemed like a significant amount of money at the time. In 1998, we were generating $650 million a year.
10 California counties expanded preschool access using tobacco funds. But now that money is quickly decreasing. So how to fund preschool and other early childhood services? Kenny says the commissioners charged with distributing tobacco taxes have begun exploring new ideas.
What about legalization of marijuana?
The Obama administration is trying a different strategy. It's hitting up corporate and private philanthropists in a campaign being promoted by celebrities called Invest in Us.
I'm John Legend, and I want to help our children achieve.
But are private donations the way to build a comprehensive early education system? San Francisco didn't go that route. Margaret Brodkin was one of the leaders in convincing voters to fund the city's universal preschool program through property taxes.
People are not used to thinking of it as a social justice issue, and that's what I think we've done so remarkably in San Francisco.
Their ultimate success came last November when San Franciscans voted overwhelmingly to reauthorize that program for another 25 years. In Los Angeles, I'm Deepa Fernandez for Marketplace.
And the New York Times is reporting today that the thong has peaked on the rise. Sales of granny-style drawers. You don't need to hear more on this subject from me, but the Times piece is enlightening and includes a feminist angle. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.